Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Maddock. This is our early look, our GPP preview, our NFL DFS overview show, first of the week. I am joined the first time this year by Colin Drew, the man, the myth, the showdown legend. We're not giving away single game secrets, though. This is full slate only, Colin.
Yeah, exactly. Can't get the good stuff unless it's behind the paywall. No, I think we did some preseason stuff, but not since then. So it's good to be back on the main slate, battling a cold this week. So apologize for my raspy voice, but we'll get it done.
Yeah, and you came back for this is the worst slate of the year, and I don't even think it's close.
It's crazy. You open it up, and I mean, there's like two games that pop as like somewhat attractive. Last week was one of the best slates. It felt like there were great spots kind of all over the place.
Great spots everywhere. Yeah.
And this game, every game looks ugly. But I kind of like slates like this, especially if it funnels like all the ownership to one or two places.
Well, I'll tell you right now. Derek Carr chalk week, that's not going to end well for you. Out there, if you're like, okay, I'm going to load up Derek Carr. I'm going to load up Russell Wilson. I'm going to load up Josh Allen. Like, you are setting yourself up to just be stone cold disappointed.
And especially, it's kind of crazy. It's like the 4 o'clock game. So you got the Oakland Detroit game, should draw a lot of ownership. Pretty entertaining game there. And then Seattle Tampa, especially if Tampa's able to, you know, keep up their run defense and funnel Russ into passing more. Expect some fireworks there. But man, if you're going to play the 1 p.m. only slate, it might be the grossest slate of all time.
So you're saying I should just be like,
I mean,
this is my takeaway
lineups in the 1 p.m. only. Absolutely.
You need to be in these slates. You need to be jamming in 150 and you need to be doing the double stacks. Cause let me tell you, if people aren't double stacking Deshaun Watson when they have like a 32 team total, guess what? They are for sure not double stacking Phillip Rivers with like a 19 team total. It is just not going to happen. Like, there are some very obvious ways this week to get like very unique lineup constructions.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I think generally tight pricing sort of does a couple things. I mean, tight pricing can mean that it's super sharp or just that the slate's so ugly, but generally
this is like the most efficiently priced DraftKings slate I think I've ever seen.
And who knows, value always opens up throughout the week, but I do think tight pricing generally increases the value of taking ownership stances. And then it also increases the value of correlation. And especially if people are going to be uncomfortable with the correlating on a slate like this, I think it's pretty interesting. Obviously that breaks down a little bit differently, kind of depending what site you're playing on. what quarterback you're playing on. So maybe we can get into some of that a little bit.
Yeah, I did want to talk about this because this is something we talked about in the Daily Roto subscribers chat this last week. But, you know, a lot of the research that people did over the offseason, specifically would like to give a shout out to our boy Eric Beam 4 from Roto Grinders, did a ton of research on stacking and correlation this offseason. And that's been the way that I've been really approaching tournaments this year, is really trying to correlate kind of as much as possible. But I definitely think there is something to be said for the idea that it's way better to do that on DraftKings than FanDuel due to the full PPR.
So I think it is a little bit better to do it on DraftKings. Generally, the like DK QB wide receiver correlations are slightly higher than FanDuel, but they're still fairly high in FanDuel. The big reason that DK, it's the PPR, which definitely is there, and then it's the yardage bonuses as well at 300 yards passing or 100 yards receiving. That also has like a subtle impact on the increase of correlation. And then I think DK specifically, there are kind of more players that you can fit in that might correlate well. FanDuel, more touchdown oriented. On DK, some value guys, you know, if they get you 6 for 60 or 8 for 80, or you know, the Julian Edelman types, like they're a little bit more correlated. One of the things I did kind of prepping for this podcast was I went and looked at year to date, the correlations actually between some of these players on DK and FanDuel. And for the most part, they're pretty similar. But when you think about kind of the quintessential PPR guy, like a Julian Edelman, the correlation between him and Tom Brady is much higher on DraftKings than it is on FanDuel.
Yeah, that just has to be true. And I will say I've played less on FanDuel. I've actually been trying to play more there because everyone just keeps hammering to me that like people are way worse on FanDuel and that it's better to make teams there. So I have been trying to play there a little bit more. Yeah. And I do just single stack there.
So I think the questions you really should be asking yourself is basically the first one, like, is the quarterback's projection boosted by rushing equity? So the NFL is changing. We kind of used to have one or two of these guys that,
and yeah, now we got like six.
Yeah. So like the Lamar Jacksons, and you know, the double stack can still get there and it will be low owned if it does. But if the projection is boosted by rushing equity, the correlation between the quarterback and the wide receivers is going to be lower. So you definitely want to be looking at that stuff on like a QB by QB basis. I think the other big question is kind of understanding whether or not the projection is driven by touchdowns or volume of pass attempts. So the, you know, the Jared Goff versus the Russ Wilson example, if Russ is going to be super efficient, his correlation is going to be pretty similar on FanDuel and DraftKings if it's basically the team total and the efficiency propping it up. Whereas, you know, Goff's is going to be much higher on DraftKings if it's being propped up by rushing volume. So I think all that stuff is really important. And then just understanding generally how tight the targets are for the pass catching options, whether that's, you know, the wide receiver tight ends or whether or not it's kind of PPR running backs too.
Yeah, I think all of that is, I think all of that's pretty reasonable. So let's dig into some of these plays. So if you agree that chalk Derek Carr is not good, where do you go from there? Because in early runs of our stuff, you are going to get a lot of Derek Carr. The guy you're going to get a ton of is Russell Wilson. And this is not an argument I'm ever going to win versus Drew and Mike, but I do think that our Russell Wilson projections on a weekly basis are I always think they're like a point too aggressive.
Yeah, I feel like he usually gets there though.
Well, you know, it's like, honest to God, it's like 50-50 of him getting there or not. And it is completely variance related. Like the last 2 weeks, 182 passing yards, two touchdowns, 241 passing yards, one touchdown. So it's like, if they are up 10-0, you like that lineup is dead. That lineup that Russell Wilson is in, he's not getting there.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. I think, you know, pulled off him a little bit just from tournaments as far as the value of the game stack when you had Matt Ryan eliminated there. For Derek Carr, I guess quarterback ownership doesn't really bother me for the most part. I've done some historic research just on correlation of QB ownership with actual performance, and like the DFS market as a whole is pretty efficient at identifying the right quarterbacks on a weekly basis as far as returning value on their salaries and producing a good amount of fantasy points. And where the DFS market struggles a lot is at the wide receiver position and the tight end position. And that's usually where I would like to make a pivot. I think the Oakland issue is it's not just Carr's ownership. They do have a concentrated passing attack. If I want to stack Carr, I know that I want to do it with Waller or Williams, but I think
but you know that Waller and Williams are going to be mad chalk as one-offs. So like if like a 25-point Waller game, if Carr like only kind of gets there, like then you're trailing to Phillip Rivers, Keenan Allen teams or whatever.
Yeah, so I think that's more what would get me off of Oakland is the ownership of those two guys than it is anything else. And there's not like a pivot within Oakland that I love. So like, I'm not super excited about pivoting to, you know, Hunter Renfrow or Zay Jones for four targets. And so if anything gets me off of the Oakland game entirely, it's going to be more the ownership of Williams and Waller. Curious to see if Tyrell does carry ownership this week. We don't have an early
ownership. He's expensive this week, at least. Like they didn't leave him at like 4,500 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. He's kind of priced up right close enough to Waller.
I just can't in tournaments. I will have some of the Stafford double stacks, but like I'm not double stacking Derek Carr in tournaments. And if I get beat, like it's like I'm gonna lose anyways, probably. So I don't want to lose with chalk Derek Carr Waller stacks. You know, like I would rather go really weird with like Jacoby Brissett, T.Y. Hilton teams, or I mean I think the double stack is very obvious, and it's Jameis Winston with Evans and Godwin, because they run a super, super concentrated passing offense, and it seems like no matter how many points Godwin and Evans score, they just don't ever get to be chalk.
Yeah, it could be coming this week if there's only, you know, two games that people are looking to game stack, but we'll see. We'll see where that shakes out. I would say, you know, Russ, because of all the reasons you mentioned, it seems like he's only producing ceiling performances when he's forced to throw a lot in games where Seattle maybe gets down by a touchdown or two early, or is trailing in the second half. Those are the games where he's been getting aggressive and he's been able to support kind of multiple pass catchers. So
I think what you do with Russell Wilson is you just say, if Russell Wilson, then exactly two of Evans, Godwin, Metcalf. Like you only use him in correlated lineups. You don't use him as a one-off at all, I think.
Yeah, and I would definitely be looking to double stack Russ and game stack him if I was going to do that on any of my lineups. I think you could mix in David Moore as like one of the wide receiver pivots. He's really cheap on DraftKings. It is a tight pricing week where you want to find salary relief. You know, he's not going to have big PPR yardage upside, but if he does score and you can get kind of a 4 for 40 with a touchdown type of outcome and use that to pivot off and save some salary and hope that, you know, only one of Lockett or Metcalf goes off, then I think that would be maybe a contrarian way to game stack, because whoever does game stack Seattle, they're going to do it through Lockett, Metcalf, and then, like you said, through Evans and Godwin. Not sure if you have news on OJ Howard. I guess that would be the other guy who could potentially get drawn into the game stack.
Not tying my anchor, not tying my boat to that anchor anymore. I've had enough of three OJ Howard targets a game.
He's the same price as Cameron Brate this week, so it'll be interesting if they both.
So I hope that, I mean, I think Brate is legit playable if Howard does sit, but I don't think Howard is playable. Tanner Hudson now has more end zone targets on the year than OJ Howard.
Yeah.
That's the scene that we're in with Tampa Bay right now.
Pretty, so pretty consensus. Those will be the two most popular games to stack of the entire week. The only two games with, you know, 50 point totals.
We should give the people something else, like another game where we think both quarterbacks and multiple pass catchers from the game are playable.
Yeah. So I think one of the interesting spots to go would be the Philadelphia Eagles, Chicago Bears game. I think it's the type of game where the coaches can play aggressive if they have to. I think maybe right now they prefer not to, but the value from a salary perspective is going to be there as well. I think Wentz is stackable with, you know, Jeffrey Ertz and then Goddard. I think it carries a really nice price tag at 3,100. The salary means a lot on this slate. And so I think that's a pretty interesting one. And obviously the Bears offense, like, it hasn't really been there, but if any of the 1 o'clock games kind of gets a little weird, it wouldn't shock me if this game got a little bit weird and it does sound like there's at least a chance that DeSean Jackson could be back this week, which would open things up a little bit for Philly as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it seems like that is the case. I'm a little bit worried that the return of DeSean Jackson is going to limit snaps for Goddard though. More three wide receiver stuff, less two tight end stuff.
Yeah. I think that's a possibility. But it's also just a possibility that it impacts Aguilar and they kind of stick with what they have there. The other thing I guess I like about it a little bit, I do think Tariq Cohen is an interesting punt running back on a slate where you do want to pay up for Christian McCaffrey. He's just 4,200 and he's not going to play if the game stays close. He's not going to get heavily targeted, but if the Eagles do get ahead by a touchdown or two, then he should kind of return to the 50% of snap role, the role that could see him with, you know, a wide receiver one or two type target volume. And so that is one of the other appealing things is just the game stack there could be extremely cheap.
You just got to go look at the projections and just jam Mark Walton.
I did want to talk to you about Mark Walton.
I don't know what you do, man, because he played, I think, 92% of the snaps. The only time he came off the field was at the goal line, which, like, that is going to be the tilting thing, is if Mark Walton gets 22 carries for 84 yards, 4 receptions for 13 yards, and Kalen Ballage gets the touchdown, because that moves Walton from being, like, a good play to being, like, literally like, if you think he's not going to get the goal line work at all, he's unplayable, I think.
Yeah, because, I mean – if you just were to, and there's always a chance that like they lean a little bit more on Kalen Ballage, but if you just were to describe the situations on paper, you've got like a running back that's going to play 80% of snaps, a running back that could get 14% of the target volume in the passing game.
And they're not even that big of dogs.
They got a low implied total, but it's a close game. I mean, it doesn't sound that different than Christian McCaffrey if you just take the names out and you don't talk about efficiency and skill and all, and you know, so I think Wallen has to be in play, especially on those teams where you want to play it for CMC. You know, you're basically faced with a choice.
Like, I mean, CMC, he fumbled and they just went right back to him. Like, it wasn't like they didn't even give Ballage a, like, Wallen fumbled when Miami, like, they could have been driving to take the lead against. And I mean, maybe they want Wallen to play because he's terrible and they want to lose or whatever. But like, it was like he fumbled and it was right back to him.
So it's 14.5K for those two guys, both which could reasonably be 20 touch guys, or you can pay for the next tier, drop down a big gap and kind of go into the 7K tier with like Aaron Jones, Le'Veon Bell, Austin Eckler, Connor, if he's healthy. Like, do you have a preference between CMC Walton versus two of the 7K guys that carry
CMC Walton, I think. Although, I mean, this is going to be really bad for our FFPC teams, but for DFS purposes, I'm hoping James Conner just takes a breather.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think we have Walton right now as like the RB10 on the week on DraftKings, so I think he's going to be one of the stronger values on the
season. Yeah, and Jalen Samuels is priced at 4K flat. If James Conner does not go, he will be probably the highest owned player of the slate. Actually, he definitely would be
and he should be, right? If he's priced that low and you get basically a little bit of a better game environment, a little bit better team with Pittsburgh, you know, we can be involved in the passing game as well. So that would, I guess, that would open up, that would be kind of, that would erase the tight pricing week because everybody would be comfortable paying for Samuels.
Yeah. So I think this by far though is the biggest topic. There are less than 30 total flex plays. So that means running back, wide receiver, tight end who just project as positive values in like our algorithm for DK. How do you go about approaching a week where it's just like, man, there just are not very many good plays?
Yeah, I guess the first thing is that I'll try to play the good plays that are available specifically at the quarterback or running back position. So if we're able to get Jalen Samuels in there, like I would – last week I think Latavius was the guy, 5.8K. I think I had him in 90% of my lineups across MME, both early slate and main slate. And I think Samuels, if he does open up as a 4K value, is a guy that – you should just take what's there and play him in almost all of your lineups. And I think the position to differentiate would be if the ownership does funnel to these kind of marginal wide receiver plays for teams that aren't really great teams, then I think that is where I start to get off of it and just hope to capture some lightning in a bottle at that position.
Yeah, I locked Latavius Murray last week, and I probably would lock Jalen Samuels this week, I think.
Yeah, I just kind of let it fly, and it just kind of shook out that way versus like hitting the lock button. But I think that's how big the value gap would be between Samuels and kind of the next best value running back.
Yeah. And as we do this right now, I'm looking at last week's Millionaire Maker lineup, and it was a double stack with a bring back.
Yeah, I mean they've been getting there more often than not, and I don't think you always have to force the bring back depending on kind of the game environment, but you do need these outlier performances to win the large field GPPs. If you look at the smaller field ones too, a lot of times it's the double stack with a bring back getting there as well. If you're going to play a CMC, I think one of the other games that could potentially be interesting would be that Carolina game, because Kyle Allen is just above 5K on DraftKings, and both DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel are below $5,000. So even though like CMC himself is a really tough fit, I think if like a three-man stack with Allen, CMC, and one of those two wide receivers is pretty affordable.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of makes sense because there are like tertiary plays that we like there anyways, like obviously McCaffrey, but like people kind of like Tannehill, people kind of like AJ Brown, like there are teams there that do just sort of make sense for that. People just kind of like those plays anyways.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing, just from a strategy perspective, I know the main slate is what kind of gets all the coverage in the content circles. It's what we focus on most. It has the biggest prize pools, but if you're trying to grind for an edge and trying to grind for profit, like a lot of the ownership is going to funnel to the best spots per our projections this week. And those spots are all in the 4 o'clock games. And so there's still an edge within these 1 p.m. slates within the projections and kind of the lineup building and optimizer process. Those spots are going to be undercovered in content this week. And so I think it's a good week from an edge perspective, especially if your edge comes from kind of roster construction versus player projection. I think there's an edge in the 1 o'clock only slate, and you kind of dodge all the chalk spots and all the spots that are most covered by content this week.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually a good point. It's just people don't grind out the 1 PM content or the afternoon content, or really even showdown content. Like showdown content is, it's not really out there.
Yeah. I think, you know, showdown content a little bit more prevalent. Now, obviously we've got our weekly article up. There's a couple of podcasts out there, but for sure, these kind of micro slates, I think, are pretty good spots, especially for tournaments this week, just because of, I think, the way that all of the chatter is going to funnel towards those two attractive games in the 4 o'clock hour.
Yeah. And I really am hoping that God does not deliver me Mark Walton this week. I need a winning week, bud. It's just not going to come with Mark Walton.
What if Mark Walton is the edge this week?
I mean, Mark Walton, he played a ton of snaps, and I think there is definitely a chance that Mark Walton is the reverse Ty Johnson. So like Ty Johnson projected as a great value but did not play a ton, and people jammed him in anyways. And Mark Walton is going to be a guy that people don't want to play despite the numbers showing that he, like, that's the guy.
Yeah, I think one of the more interesting things that could happen this week would be if Connor is ruled out, at least for this week, and we know that Samuels is going to get a big workload in that game just because of how thin the Steelers running back depth chart is. And so at that point, everyone's going to play Samuels, kind of like the same thing happened with the late news with Latavius and Chase Edmonds last week, and it'll pull some of the ownership off of Walden. So I think that would be one of the more interesting decisions, is like if Samuels becomes available. Obviously he's a lock in kind of most of your lineups, but do you go with Walton anyways in that scenario because the value is still kind of there?
Yeah. So I think the last thing we should talk about is some wide receiver value, because we both just kind of mentioned a bunch of high price running backs that we all think of as good plays. And I'm not really seeing a ton of value wide receiver spots to go to, other than I think DJ Moore is like a single entry three max, like gold star play.
I like both Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore quite a bit. I think
our stuff slightly prefers Samuel for cheaper than DJ Moore as of Wednesday morning.
Yeah, I think it's got more like slightly ahead outright as far as the projection, but Samuel a little bit ahead just on value, right?
Yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, Moore has been way more of a consistent fantasy asset. Like, I will probably play DJ Moore in cash. So that means all of you out there should not play him, probably. Probably means that he's walking into an ACL tear on the first drive.
The other guy our stuff likes quite a bit that I can never quite wrap my head around what to do, but Cole Beasley is
it's because Michael is wrong. That's why. It's because Michael is just – it's just – Cole Beasley is we just have him with like very good peripheral numbers, but it's just so hard to tell a median projection. This guy is getting over 20 like 3% of the time. It's just it's hard to filter that into a median projection. Yeah. So I don't even think his peripherals are wrong. I just think his median projection is screwy.
Well, he's still only projected for 12 DK points. So,
but this week, that's like an oasis, though.
I know, but he's getting similar target volume to John Brown. I think the way I like to handle this in the optimizer is with the volatility setting. And so, a lot of times, what I'll go through is filter, and maybe if I run a standard volatility at like 20 or something like that. With Beasley, I'll knock the volatility down to 10. With Brown, I'll knock it up to 30. And then in MME, I'll kind of just let it run from there. That usually at least gets me a little bit more exposure to like the John Browns of the world in tournaments, and still get a little bit of Beasley, but less than you would if you kind of ran the same volatility setting.
If I was rich like Drew Dinkmeyer, I would probably lock John Brown in MME this week. I think this is about as good of a spot as it could ever get for him, because Washington actually has a respectable run defense, and Buffalo has been like scheming stuff for John Brown, and he's left some that Will Fuller game out there on the field basically because Josh Allen is so bad at being accurate down the field. But one of these games, he's going to hit on two of those, and John Brown's going to get 36 DraftKings points and break the slate.
I mean, you could almost break the slate with like 25 DraftKings points on this slate.
Yeah, right.
And Josh Allen, I do think, is top three or four wide or quarterback value for us this week. Obviously has some rushing equity there. So I do think...
Obviously has some Leone homerism bias in there.
Bringing it back, though, to the start, I think like Josh Allen's the type of guy that you can single stack. You don't have to force the double stack in there for him.
Yeah, I think the double stacks that I am interested in are pretty limited this week. I think it would be like Wilson, Winston, Stafford, and Rivers, and those are probably the only guys that I would be looking to double stack.
Yeah.
So
I guess that when in doubt, I usually will try to double stack anyways. Sometimes it ends up kind of costing you, but I think the odds of you, if you go quarterback one wide receiver, I think the odds of you getting the second wide receiver right are still lower than just kind of going with like a YOLO double stack on that guy. So I'm especially in the slate this ugly where it, like you said, the double stack feels uncomfortable.
Yeah, the correlation is just, it's going to matter so much because at a certain point with a slate like this, with such low totals, you kind of just got to throw your hands up and be like, look, man, I don't really know who's going to score more points between DK Metcalf or Alshon Jeffrey, but I know that decision is going to influence hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I might as well just correlate that as much as possible.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at with this slate.
I think that makes sense. I think, the takeaways for me on this slate is I probably want to focus a lot of my kind of budget on the 1 o'clock only slate versus the main slate. I think there's going to be some good edge for us there. It also gets me away from just having to fade chalk that I think is in a really good spot, which I don't love to do. It just makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable, especially when it's like late chalk. And I guess that's the other thing is, one of the interesting elements for DFS, I think, is that it's almost like playing with position in poker when you play these late games, because you're able to see how the rest of your roster shook out. So if you have the nuts at running back from the 1 o'clock games and you've got like Oakland and Seattle stacks dialed up, that's awesome. Just like let those ride. But if you don't have the nuts, you know those games are going to be really popular. And so you could kind of pivot to the other side of those or pivot to, you know, Baker Mayfield or Aaron Rodgers or, you know, even Rivers, like some of the secondary games in the 4 o'clock slate.
Yeah, I think all of that is reasonable. Do you have some one-offs you want to talk about before we head out of here?
No, I think, well, I guess I would say for the one-offs, I do think it's a good slate to try to play one-offs outside of the game stacks. So even if you're going with like a contrarian game stack, I think you want to play a one-off from outside of there. The two favorite ones we already talked about, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore. I think Odell Beckham is an interesting one-off, just 6,600 for him. And then T.Y. Hilton is another guy at 6,500. I think, you know, I always kind of dial up the volatility on that type of play in the optimizer for my runs, just because they can kind of get there with like one or two pretty big plays. And then the other two guys, I feel like Keenan Allen is going to draw a fair bit of ownership this week. Mike Williams, I think, is an interesting one-off at 4,600. Rivers will at least keep throwing the ball if the Chargers get behind. So I like the guys kind of in that game too for one-off.
Yeah, maybe this is the game though where they finally say enough Melvin Gordon and it's just all Eckler season. Yeah. Would be interesting. I'm definitely going to play that angle in a couple of tournaments. So I don't have any big thoughts on one-offs quite yet. The guys that I really like are, you know, they're just going to be sort of chalky, like guys like DJ Moore. But Mike Evans and Godwin are also guys that I think are really strong, and I think you can play them as one-offs as well.
That makes sense. I think the other thing I generally wanted to get your feedback on, for me, I think it's mostly a punt week at tight ends. I want to try to pay down if at all possible. All the ownership's going to go to Waller, I think, especially, you know, with Kelsey without Mahomes. Henry is now kind of priced up. There's a lot of mouths to feed in that offense. I don't feel like I have to pay up for him there. And so I do think it's like a week where I kind of want to punt at tight end. I know we were talking about one-off wide receivers, but I think punting at tight end with like a Dallas Goedert or a Greg Olsen or a OJ Howard / Cameron Brait, or even like TJ Hockenson. I don't think he carried a ton of ownership last week, and he didn't do a ton, but it's still a good matchup, and he's like a contrarian piece of that popular game. I think that could be a pretty good punt one-off at tight end.
Yeah, that's actually the thing I'm struggling with, is I'm pretty sure Dallas Goedert is just going to be huge chalk. So I think there is to me, some EV to be garnered in playing $4,700 Zach Ertz. Because I like, my expectation is that Goddard probably ends up in most people's cash teams.
Do you think so?
Yeah. Yeah, just from looking at stuff and running our projections early on and seeing how much you're going to have to pay at running back to get guys you like. I mean, if Mark Walton ends up being chalk, Goddard is probably not chalk. But if you're not playing Mark Walton, or if we don't get Jalen Samuels, I think people are going to take Goddard.
Yeah. Yeah, I figured Waller would be the kind of the highest owned of the group, just because the projections there, price is a little bit high, but maybe Goddard is there afterwards. That I wasn't sure if people would be pretty heavy on him or not.
Yeah. All right, so I think that's going to do it for us here at the early preview, our early NFL DFS look at the Week 9 slate. Please make sure to check out dailyroto.com. You can see all of these projections that we're referencing, and on a week where making decisions is tough, we would definitely like to help you make those decisions, and we will be back tomorrow with the flagship show.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.